Hey everybody, welcome to Back Issues, the comic podcast so old we saw Galen actually become Galactus. Alright, I'm Jason. With me tonight are Daryl.
Yo.
Dick.
Hey.
And returning guest Mike.
Hello.
Normally I'd lead into the topic, but I didn't choose the topic this week, so I'm going to let Dick handle it. It was his idea.
Alrighty, so I had a favorite movie when I was a kid growing up, and it was The Mask with Jim Carrey. And so learning that there was a comic about it a while later, I went and checked out the comic and realized that the movie wasn't quite exactly what the comics were. So I went and looked into it, and I really enjoy the series. It's very dark, very twisted. It's very interesting. I really like it. I almost want to say it's kind of like pop punk art in a way, yeah. But I'm probably wrong there.
I'd say the tone of the comic is very nihilistic and very kind of like, you know, power fantasy-esque.
Now, let's put this into a little bit of perspective. The Mask debuted in Mayhem issue 1 back in May of 1989.
Yeah.
Yep. Under, I believe it was Dark Horse. Yeah, it was Dark Horse.
Yep,
this is back when Dark Horse was still first getting their licensed properties and still trying to find their niche in the comic, you know, kingdom.
Right.
And they were putting out some amazing work, like Concrete, very good character. Very underground, kind of superhero with a twist comics.
Right, yeah, that definitely described their input back in the day. Very, you know, experimental in a lot of ways too. You know, this was shit that nobody else was really doing inside. Kind of like, I mean, you know, you could consider Dark Horse kind of a, you know, one of the tentpole publishing houses. You know, once it hit its heyday, but at the time, you know, they were taking chances and.
At the time, nobody was sure they were even going to make it.
Right, right. And yeah. and they were taking chances and putting out stuff like The Mask.
Yeah, and it just really shows just the quality of the work that they put out and just the variance in the market that's out there that people don't even think about. And it's interesting to see, especially here in The Mask, just where that audience is. It's the people who want to see, you know, characters that you know, push the boundaries, as it were, you know, almost to a point of breaking them, whether it's in dark, twisted ways, I can't think of any other Dark Horse comics off the top of my head right now. I apologize. I lost where I was going with that. So
for me, Dark Horse is all about Hellboy.
Yeah.
Hellboy. That's a perfect example. Goddamn.
And the great thing about Dark Horse is that they let their creators run wild, and you know.
And guys, there's an idea for a future episode. Let's do some Hellboy someday.
Oh, definitely, And it sounds like we should do Concrete as well.
I don't know. Concrete, like, it was very niche.
Mm-hmm.
It was very small, from what I remember.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. I liked it, but. I don't know if there's enough material there, yeah.
Right.
Understandable.
I mean, if we're going to do early Dark Horse, we have to really go into, like, Alien and Predator franchises.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that some of their first licensed stuff?
Yeah, their first licensed stuff was a lot of adaptations.
Right.
Yeah.
Didn't they have the, now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I might be very wrong, didn't they have the Star Wars license at one point?
For a long time.
Yeah.
Up until Marvel.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They took it, well, they had it when Marvel let it lapse, and then ran it until Disney bought out Marvel.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But speaking of The Mask, where did you want to start, Dick?
So, it's really interesting to take a look at the movie and take a look at the comics and just, like, the liberties that were taken by the people writing the script and everything.
Right.
It's this weird amalgamation between these two characters. You have Stanley...
Ipkiss.
I'm bad at pronouncing his last name, so
right.
You have Stanley, you know, this sort of, you know, weird guy, kind of
meek, bookish guy.
Yeah, you know, kind
a very
of
would... not even beta male, but more like a gamma male.
Yeah, he's very scenery. Milk toast. And
scenery is a good way to put it.
Right.
And he stumbles upon this magic cursed, you know, piece of wood that's this crazy green color, and it turns him into this big headed crazy cartoon character that's a psychopath.
And he buys this for his girlfriend at first.
Yeah, he buys it as a gift for his girlfriend first. And it's just this crazy thing to think about, because it's like they get that part sort of right in the movie.
Right.
Then everything after that, it's all sugar-coated. There's
very few shades of the comic in the flick. Just little touches like Stanley's visit to the car joint that's fucking him over and shit like that. You know, there's touches that kind of remind you that it is a comic book adaptation. But beyond that, it Jason, you were gonna.
Yeah, the original four issues, Mayhem 1-4, really had a lot of different and interesting themes with this character. I mean, obviously the first big one is, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, because Stanley is such a milquetoast, weak-willed, spineless, you know, little peon.
Yep.
But when he puts the mask on and becomes Big Head, he becomes this large, louder-than-life, angry, wicked, this force of, like, nature.
Well, and not just that, but he, you know, whereas Stanley was repressed, Big Head is very much the opposite. He's very much the realization of all Stanley's frustrations.
Yeah.
You know?
And what makes it more interesting is there's a second layer on top of it, which is, you know, Lord Acton's dictum. Power tends to corrupt, absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely. The longer Stanley keeps the mask on, the more fucked up stuff he does, the more his personality changes.
Right.
He becomes a verbally abusive asshole and gets, you know, kicked to the curb by his girlfriend, who then keeps the mask, but still. Right.
Didn't she toss it out and he broke back in to get it or something like that?
It got tossed out at one point, then brought back, and then she kept it when she kicked him out and put it back on display, and which led to, of course, Stanley breaking in to take it back.
Right.
But the thing is, Stanley in the book is nothing like Stanley in the movie. In the movie, he becomes an unhinged Joker. In the book, he becomes, he becomes an unhinged asshole.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you know, in the movie, Stanley, his attitude towards the end of the flick is definitely informed by the mask. He becomes more confident and shit. Mm-hmm. But in the book, it corrupts him. Absolutely, it corrupts him, and he becomes, you know, just the worst version of himself.
Jekyll,
you know,
becomes Hyde, without splitting.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like he takes on the persona of the mask essentially without, you know, in a sort of way, you know, and he basically becomes dependent upon it too, you know.
What I find one of the interesting things about the mask as a hero is that he has the superpower of the magic hole, you know, the infinite pocket,
hammer space.
Hammer space, yeah. There's lots of names for that. It's one of my favorite powers that doesn't get explored very often. And it's nice to see the way that it's applied, you know, because it goes from everything from him changing his comic for a visual gag to, you know, pulling out weapons and things like that.
And breaking the fourth wall.
Exactly, right? That too. And it's through these things that we get a character he's very much detached from what he's doing, which just dehumanizes the person that's wearing the mask even more, because his actions and the mask persona are so detached from what's going on. And actually, if you go ahead and we move on to the next set of comics after Mayhem. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was going to bring up, I add breaking the fourth wall to that power because it is such a a trope within the comic itself for the wielder of the mask to be pulling out something out of this hammer space and turn to address the audience at the same time.
Exactly, yeah. And that's the thing. That's where he gets his power from, is that people are observing, you know, is sort of a way to look at that.
Yeah.
One of the big things about the mask and Big Head himself is that he appears to be a comic book, a cartoon character, excuse me, cartoon character being brought into the real world, which has absolutely devastating consequences for absolutely everyone around him.
Mm-hmm.
He's got physical invulnerability, which is a trait that is had by very many, very, very many cartoon characters, anywhere from Bugs Bunny to Texas Avery, et cetera, to basically having, as you said, hammer space, and generally being able to survive everything that happens to him is...
You know, the way... sorry, Mike. Keep going, Mike.
I'm rambling.
No.
One of the things I really have to say is it feels like the dark side to Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Exactly, yeah. Although,
which is really fucked up, because Who Framed Roger Rabbit was pretty dark on its own.
Definitely. One of the interesting things as well, in addition to having hammer space and all the invulnerability and whatnot, is since he's a cartoon character, he has plot armor because he's the main character. You know, so like a good example of this is, you know, he gets shot hundreds of maybe even thousands of times amongst all the comics. Just in the first four comics of the mask itself, outside of Mayhem, and you know, he walks away from all of it. You know, he has a healing factor that's crazy because he's a cartoon. You know, it's this weird sort of horrific thing, because if you were to think about that, it would be frightening to see in real life. You know.
Oh yeah. Now he does have one other power that is not fully illuminated much, but it's kind of, you can definitely tell it's there. The mask itself can give the wearer increased intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But, or at least increased awareness.
Yeah. But it comes at the cost of basically sanity.
Yes.
You lose all inhibitions, your self-control goes to shit, and you just become crazy.
Oh, well, the sanity's a drain on all of the powers.
And I think, like Mike said, though, that, you know, he hit on something really well, which was that, you know, the character is the realization of a cartoon character, and with all the, you know, issues,
accoutrements and
right,
such,
right, exactly, you know, and with all the implications that brings into the real world, you know. So it's kind of an interesting take on the character, for sure.
What's interesting is after the four issues of Mayhem, Stanley's ex takes the mask.
Hold on, before you get to that.
Okay.
We should tell him how the Mayhem run ends.
That would be your forte, good sir.
It ends with Stanley having taken the mask off, and, you know, wants to, you know, talk, like, you know, think about what he's done, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, gets shot in the back.
Yeah, his girlfriend blows him away.
And she's wearing the mask when she does it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
She was wearing the mask and had apparently used that power to make a gun appear and then shot Stanley in the back and killed him.
Which is, you know, goes to show that the mask itself, as an entity, doesn't give a shit about who its host is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You get a feel that it's more just in it for the chaos.
Yes, exactly.
Which is possibly why it's been referred to and connected to Loki.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, was that canon? The Loki connection?
I don't. No.
I know they played it up in the flicks.
Yeah.
Well,
here's the thing about the Age of the Mask. Where it would be coming from would be the ages of man when they still believed in the power of the other, where you could take on the power of the other, such as the beast or this animal or the straight up powers of chaos and essentially make yourself a whole different person as a result of interacting with this other. And this mask appears to be personification of, as you guys said, it is a personification of chaos itself. It is absolutely everything that is not, everything that it should not be. It is unkillable. It is insatiable, and it is self-aware. And it will basically do whatever it can in order to perpetuate that state. It's boggling, to be honest.
Right. And it attaches itself to several different characters, actually, over the course of the various books.
Yeah. Now, Daryl.
Yes.
To answer your question, Loki was not canon until the movie. That's where it was first really put in.
Yeah, see, that's what I figured, yeah.
But the comics after the movie use the continuity of the cartoon and movie.
Right, right.
So in those, it is legitimately Loki-based.
Were those Dark Horse as well, The Adventures of the Mask?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so yeah. Okay, well then... And it makes sense. Loki as a trickster god, you would definitely have the mask having those qualities, you know, makes sense. So I would say that's one good addition that the movie made to the canon.
Yeah.
I wonder if his face is green for a reason within Norse mythology.
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe related to the green man? I don't know.
Right. And the color of the mask is never really established in the...
Well,
in the books,
it is,
of course, because it's
it is.
Black and white. Is it?
On the covers.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He is green. That's right. He is green on the covers. That's true. Never mind. Duh. brain fart there for
it's
a second.
It's all good.
But yeah. So, okay. Well, then that is a good question. Probably because of the cartoony properties, maybe. He's kind of surreal and you know, comic
has
booky.
To stand out, yeah.
Yeah.
You want something as absurd as possible.
Right. And a big green dude is definitely absurd, you know.
Which is weird, because only his head is green.
Right.
The rest of his body is normal flesh tone.
Right. And see, they actually play that up in the books, too. In the way the host body can take damage. You know, like, we see people getting shot, you know, holes through their chests and shit like that.
Yeah.
And you know, so the mask, of course, makes you invulnerable. But, you know, your body itself, you know... Whereas the mask wouldn't necessarily take damage, you know, like the character getting shot in the head really doesn't do anything.
Oh, he takes damage like that, but it still heals.
Right, exactly. But that's the thing, you know. I mean, the body itself is definitely separated from the...
The character of Walter has been able to injure the mask. Or Big Head.
Has he?
Yes.
Well, yeah, if you're talking about knocking her out and shit...
No, Walter was actually able to hurt him.
Really?
Yeah.
I must have missed that.
It's further on.
Yeah.
Over the years, I've read bits and pieces of different Mask series.
Right. Now, see, I binge read the entire series a couple weeks ago, but it has been a couple weeks, and I've got the memory of a fucking goldfish, so... But, yeah. Anyway, let's continue. Dick?
So after the original run in Mayhem, the next storyline is that Stanley's girlfriend takes the mask over to the head investigator on the case.
Kellaway.
Over to Agent Kellaway because she doesn't want it anymore. She hates it. It makes her think about Stanley and all the crimes that Big Head committed and everything and all the craziness that happened with that. Because, like, didn't they lose 11 cops?
Some number like that, yeah.
Yeah, and he killed a whole bunch more other people other than that.
Crime lords and such.
Yeah, a whole bunch of scummy people. So, you know, she's seen a lot of death associated with this thing. And so... Kellaway doesn't think it's her warning to not put it on is serious because she straight tells him, don't put it on. Just don't put it on. Keep this, but don't put it on. And so, of course, Kellaway, being lame, puts it on. And he decides that he's going to use the character of Big Head as a way to commit vigilante justice because, you know, the system slows things down with bureaucracy, and he's actually heading up an investigation for one of the major drug lords in the area, and he has heroin that ties this person to the distribution of heroin and murders involving people being injected with heroin to this guy. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Rapaz.
Yeah, Rapaz. And so ultimately, throughout the course of the comics, Rapaz ends up managing to make that disappear, and Kellaway, in order to kind of get what he sees as justice, uses the mask in several different situations to commit this vigilante justice, and does it in the goriest way possible. And then he starts investigating himself because, you know, the police department wants him to look into it, but he says that it's just a copycat and tries to cover his own tracks, and ultimately ends up destroying his own career by using the mask.
And is this where Walter comes in?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's basically sent to find the source of this thing and become fascinated with the mask. Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just so interesting to see what the movie could have been and what they produced, and it's a very rich character. I highly recommend you go out and read the series. It's very good. I definitely recommend it.
Especially if you've got any love for the movie, it's worth checking down the source material just to kind of see, you know, where it all came from.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think he'll probably end up liking the comic a little bit better than the movie. At least I did anyway.
Yeah, it's a complete, you know, 180 from the movie, you know, for sure. So that takes a little bit of getting used to, you know.
But it's definitely a nice pace, and it's definitely interesting, and it's decidedly dark in a delicious way.
Absolutely. Now, you want to talk about the art for a little bit?
I love the art style. The people and the panels where the mask isn't being worn are all very sort of a standard comic style. Think sort of like almost Superman-ish, but not really, a little more detailed than that, sort of a thing. And I really like that. It definitely makes the story very easy to follow. You can see who's who. You can read the text very, very cleanly and things like that. But then whenever one of the subjects puts the mask on, they start speaking in cartoon speech bubbles.
Right.
Where the bubble breaks out of the thing and sort of breaks up the monotony of the panels of being squares with a bubble being very cleanly placed somewhere and things like that.
And with the speech, there's also the effect of the more unhinged the person becomes,
the more distorted the text looks.
And distorted, harder to read it becomes.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, but in addition to that, the art style stylistically becomes more stylized in a cartoony way. More and more deranged someone comes, Kellaway is a perfect example. The mask's dress changes as well. Kellaway dresses up with a gigantic battle axe in some ridiculous, you know, superhero-esque outfit that's over-stylized as all heck at the end of his sort of story arc. And his axe is over-stylized as well, and that kind of shows, you know, that he still had a grip on himself somewhat, but he was still losing it because he became more and more cartoony, and over time the art style reflects this as well. It's a very interesting storytelling technique because it ties into the overall theme, this theme of chaos and corruption. And I like it. I think it's very clever. I think it's something that has been done before in comics, but hasn't been executed as well as I see here in The Mask. What are your guys' thoughts?
Well, Mike, you've been quiet.
Well, I was going to mention that the period of time that the comic is set in was just at the end of the mob's lifespan, when the mob basically switched from bootlegging to heroin. Now, with the art style, this kind of ties in with the whole moving from what was, how do I say this, in-house sort of comics. The Madcap comics of the 80s and in the 60s and 70s. And it was just very, 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 I don't know how to explain it. It's a very, it's an almost commentary on the, on like, the comics at the time, as well as the style of how enunciate right now. Man, we're, this is gonna be this, we're gonna be all stuttering here, isn't it? as well as the as a call out to the how things were just changing for everyone at the time. There we go. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can see where you're going with that.
And it was just, and it, I just liked the way the art style ties into that. It's just so very poignant to me that there's this meta commentary in the very art style itself over the changes that were happening in comics at the time. So, but yeah, because it, the way the mask goes, it remember like the old Madcap comics, like the I can never remember their names, but it was very cartoony at the time. And it's then you get into like the Hero comics, and then it went, and then World War II ended, and it just changed from there. That's how this whole comic feels. That mask feels like it's calling back to those times when Madcap comics were still, you know, a thing, and it's trying to bring them into the gritty fucking 80s comics, and it's actually adds a bit to the realistic terror that someone would feel. I just like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that thematically it fits with what the storytelling is doing too, because keep in mind, this is late 80s. What else was going on in comics in the late 80s? This whole huge, gritty, you know, reboot thing.
Right, or like Frank Miller's stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like a gritty reboot to the industry.
Oh, yeah.
Not just things like, you know, Dark Knight Returns.
Sure.
But the whole industry was going through this change from the cartoony feel of the 60s and 70s to this gritty, dark, disturbing, you know,
right,
feel.
And that, and the mask was kind of a, not only a reflection of that, but a commentary on that.
Not only a reflection and a commentary, but a part of it.
Right. For sure.
Because when you think about the gritty era of the late 80s through the mid 90s, you can't have that conversation without Dark Horse.
Right. Yeah, Dark Horse was definitely pioneering in terms of tone and tenor and whatnot, for sure. So, yeah. I mean,
everybody else wants to go with Image. I'm sitting here going, dude, Dark Horse.
Image was never too far removed from mainstream, like Marvel and DC in my mind.
It always felt like...
It felt like a lot of people who lived in that Marvel and DC world trying to strike off and do their own thing.
Yeah, it felt like, you know, baby's first adventure.
Yeah, yeah.
Except for fucking Battle Chasers. I will give that story all the credit it's due.
Was that a Image?
That was Joe Madd doing Image.
Yeah. I
forget the imprint, the specific imprint.
Let me check.
It was Wildstorm.
See, Battle Chasers.
Yeah, Wildstorm.
Yep. That is true. Under its cliffhanger. Well, it was Wildstorm under its cliffhanger imprint. So.
But then Cliffhanger got taken away and all that bullshit.
Which is funny. It's funny that we're talking about a Joe Madd comic under the cliffhanger.
Yeah. You know. Considering Joe Madd can only put out an issue every 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I love the guy. I love his stuff, but man, yeah.
I know. I've always loved Joe Madd.
Yeah. He's always been one of my favorites for sure. But But yeah, that was kind of a time, you know, when I think Dark Horse was really reflective of the industry's kind of move to this grim and gritty style, and and yet at the same time, Dark Horse was taking it in an entirely different direction, in the sense that, like, you know, grim and gritty for like DC and Marvel was a very different thing next to Dark Horse, where Dark Horse was just
still tried to ground in reality.
Exactly, and not only that, but they weren't afraid to let their characters curse or do
smoke,
completely
drink,
awful things, you
blow
know?
People's heads off.
Yeah, exactly, and that, you know, and some might say that is not in and of itself an indication of maturity and stuff, but it was a different direction for the industry at the time, you know.
Yeah,
and you know, I think in a lot of ways, Dark Horse kind of paved the way for. You know, our, you know, more contemporary publishers to kind of, you know, play in that world, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we saw like the Punisher Max and for example, and shit like that, you know. Stuff that
Marvel's
was a little bit more
Marvel's whole Max
mature.
Line, period.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, you know, Dark Horse definitely deserves kudos for that, and I think, you know, the Mask in particular is very indicative of that whole thing. You know.
So, I mean, this is a series that did go big.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even, like, there's two continuities for the Mask, you know? Like I said. There's the original Mask, and then there's the informed by the movie continuity.
Right.
Original Mask had a crossover with the Joker, even.
It did. And Lobo, in fact.
Lobo was the cartoon continuity.
Was it?
I believe so.
Let's see. Lobo versus the Mask. Let me check that out. No, it looks like it was the original continuity.
Huh.
Yeah. No, it does look very much like the animated series, to be honest. I mean...
About to say, is he wearing the yellow?
Yes, he's wearing yellow. But
eventually.
The Mask was just kind of a badass character, just in terms of, you know, I mean, it was kind of, I don't know, you look at the character and he's kind of all about that, like you said, that kind of Jekyll and Hyde, you know, dynamic, but at the same time, he's like a release of sorts, you know. You watch this character, and he is doing all the things that maybe some of us wish sometimes we could do. You know, maybe not go around killing everybody, but, you know, the kind of, like, getting that kind of revenge against the people who have fucked us over and stuff like that. You know, he's very interesting kind of character in that regard. And of course... You know, you play it out through the comic, you know. You can do things through the Mask that you can't do, you know, in reality. You can read this book and you can kind of have that catharsis and stuff because this character is doing those things, you know. And I think that's why it's very successful that they introduce him as Stanley Ipkiss, because, you know, Ipkiss is kind of a reflection of the readership in a way. You know, he's maybe, you know, not so cool, maybe not so strong, you know. And so maybe he was meant to be a reflection of the nerds who read the comic, and so he was kind of like, you know, wish fulfillment and a power fantasy in a way.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just thought that was kind of a cool, you know, cool aspect of the character too, you know. Could be reading into it too much, but
hey.
That's the great thing about the Mask, though, is you can kind of look into it and kind of take away from it what you want. It's very open to that sort of interpretation and shit. So enough of me rambling. Anybody else want to? Do we have?
Yeah, Dick, this is your show, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I really like about The Mask is that it takes this idea of, you know, comics are supposed to be about the good guys. They're supposed to be about the heroes, and totally flies in its face and literally flips it off and just says, "No, fuck you. Comics are about what the fuck I say they're about." And so you get this dark, twisted sort of story. And there's a lot of that in a lot of different Dark Horse comics overall. A lot of different series that they've run. There's, you know, these twisted dark themes all over that you wouldn't see in a Marvel or a DC comic, really.
Let me ask you one thing, Dick. Mm-hmm. Would you say that it's fair to say that the mask doesn't even really qualify as an anti-hero?
Yeah, no, he's not really an anti-hero at all.
Not a hero, not an anti-hero.
He's not an anti-hero. He's just somebody who wants to fucking kill people.
Right.
That's the only thing that he wants to do. The fact that he targets criminals is just because no one's really going to care that they're gone.
But I think that's more the influence of the host.
Right. Mm-hmm. But think about it this way, too, is that, you know, what are some of the first things Stanley does when he's wearing the mask? He goes out and gets revenge, you know, for petty grievances and shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so
didn't he run somebody over for $60?
It was something like that, but I know he basically takes revenge against people who slights him. And the most heroic thing that the, you know, big head character does is kids getting bullied and he interjects on his behalf.
Yeah.
But beyond that, you know,
and he does way overkill.
Right.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the character is very selfish and self-centered and driven by the host's desires, you know, and which are, you know, not heroic at all.
Not only that, it also has to do with the desires of the mask itself.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's the mask itself is a character. It's a very chaotic entity, and since it is, it probably requires some sort of a blood sacrifice in a way. Whether that's literal
or metaphorical.
Some people
just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah, pretty much. It's this sort of destructive nature that requires death and mayhem to sort of continue to exist. You know, it's this embodiment of all things bad in the world.
Right. Now
this happens a lot with a lot of different things in Dark Horse, is that it's just these dark, raw stories, whether they're good or bad people in them. They're these evil sort of things. There's these evil sort of undertones. This sort of dark realism that flies in your face, or this sort
right.
of.
Two words: Sin City.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And see, you know. Shit! I lost my train of thought. Fuck. Never mind. I was just. Oh yeah, I was gonna say. You know, we were talking about continuity and stuff, and canon, and you know how they eventually kind of made the Norse mythology part of it and all that. But the fact that they didn't in the book, they never explained where the mask came from. It was just there, and I dug that. You know, because it kind of left it up to you to decide whether or not this thing was a force for good or evil or just whatever. You know, it didn't cram this shit down your throat, didn't give me any ideas. It just said, here's a mask, it can do this, and let's see how it affects these normal people, you know?
It almost before it's explained as having belonged to Loki or being a mask that was, you know, bound with powers by Loki or whatever the exact explanation is, beforehand it's almost as if the devil kind of conjured this thing into existence and was just like, I'm just gonna leave this here and see what happens.
Right.
You know, that's almost what it seems like. You know, it's chaos. It's chaos as a physical object.
Well, yeah, and not just that, but it's how it plays off of the host too. You know, it's like, I'm gonna give you this thing that can make you very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's see what you do with it.
In a way, you almost control your own fate,
right?
As it were,
just like, you know. And that's the thing, the mask, you know, we've talked about how it has its own desires and stuff, but I think for the most part it is driven by the host, and you know, it's how it plays out is very reflective of the people who use it, I think.
Here's
the
thing.
The mask wants to drain the sanity of the user.
You're looking at it wrong.
Hmm.
It's more like the mask does have its own will, but its will is basically, I will give you what you want, but you got to do it my way.
Well, yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah,
the beauty of the comic, though, is it can be really kind of interpreted either way, to be honest, you know?
Yeah.
True.
Now, consider that he basically, when at the very, very, very climax of the last book, Calloway basically manages to overcome the will of the mask by realizing, wait, I'm about to kill my my real and only friend here.
Right.
If I don't overcome this, I am basically worse than what I was set out to get, go against. And you can see that although the will of the mask is a very powerful entity in itself, it can be overcome. It can, with enough self-realization, be beaten in that way. But only in that way, and only for a very short time. As you find out that the series continues on after this point.
Well, yeah, it makes sense, though. It's like, now, mask is chaos. How do you overcome that with what order?
What was Ipkiss's girl's name?
Stephanie?
Kathy. She is totally able to, like, fucking use the mask and then go about, like, you know, divesting herself of it, you know, under her own will and shit.
Well, it also kind of left a mark on her as well.
Sure, it did.
That's why she got rid of it.
Right. But the thing is, though, that, you know, we're talking about characters, you know, being under the influence of the mask, you know. She's one of the few characters that can wear it and then still come out the other end of it, you know, with her willpower intact and shit. Like Calloway.
Calloway?
Yeah.
The thing is the closer you are already to the bottom, to falling off of the cliff and into rock bottom, the stronger the mask is going to grip you. You know, so Calloway and Kathy, for example, both have, you know, established careers. They're both, you know, very normal people, as it were, you know, and they're not like, for example, Stanley, who is kind of a meek loser. You know, they have a will.
Right.
Whereas Stanley didn't. They have a backbone, as it were. So they stand up for themselves and are eventually able to resist using it.
Right.
With Kathy, she experienced all these atrocities of this thing firsthand. So her only desire was to get away from it, and that's exactly what it gave her.
And
was
she was strong enough, you know, to do to Stanley what she needed to do.
Exactly.
When it came down to it, you know, so she did have a good, you know, a lot of strength of will too. Yeah, I mean, didn't she only really wear the mask out of necessity?
Yeah, exactly.
And only for, like, a brief moment.
Yeah, right.
Long enough to kill Stanley.
Exactly.
Well,
and dispose of the body, apparently.
Well, and then in she did wear it again later on, but, again, it was only out of necessity.
Yeah.
And it seemed to take control over her, but she could always, you know, take it off without any problems whatsoever, you know, like it didn't rule her as much as it did, say, Stanley, you know.
Yeah, same with Calloway as well. So that has a lot to do with
the strength of the person's character or whatever.
Exactly. And maybe that's some sort of a commentary on society.
Could be.
Maybe people need to, you know, be people.
Right. But yeah. Where else you want to take this, Dick? We've got what?
I have a suggestion.
18 minutes?
Yeah, go for it. I say we pound down
the movie.
Definitely. Yeah. That's a good idea. I hadn't even thought of that. I'm sorry. I'm a little off topic tonight. I apologize.
No worries, man. Shit happens. So yeah, let's talk about
first
the movie.
Off, one ground rule.
Yeah.
Son of the Mask does not exist.
Oh, no. Hell no.
No, that is a real thing at all.
No. And Jamie Kennedy doesn't exist either. Just in general.
Just in general, yeah. Fuck him. Yeah. Jamie Kennedy, don't worry. If you're out there, I really just want to say fuck you.
Yeah. And in case you were starting to feel good about yourself lately.
Yeah.
No, all kidding aside, though, that was an atrocity that will be forgotten by time. You know? Yeah.
Actually, no, it's not going to be forgotten for one reason. You can't buy the first movie except for in a 2-pack with the second one.
Oh. They're really trying to force that down people's throats, aren't they?
It's the only way they have to get rid of copies.
Yeah. Here, enjoy this thing that nobody likes and is... Oh, I remember back in the day, Nintendo Power ran a contest where you could the prize was a walk-on role on the set of The Mask 2, and then that never happened. and then Son of the Mask happened, and I'm sure nobody wanted to be there. But anyway, let's talk about the flick.
First off, the biggest mistake they made was neither doing Ipkiss's story nor Calloway's.
Right.
Instead, they wound up with this weird story that combined both incarnations of Big Head, the Ipkiss and the Calloway version.
Now, this is going to seem obscure to some, unless you've read the Watchmen script written by David Hayter and shit. But this movie, the way it turned out, totally reminds me of that, where you've got the basic characters and shit, but everything that happens around them is completely removed from the comics.
Yeah.
Like, it is just this weird, like Jason said, at best, it's kind of an amalgamation of the two stories, but even then, it's not really either.
You know what they kind of did? They kind of took references and checklisted them to be like, okay, do we got that one? Check. Okay, do we got that one? Check. Okay, do we got that one? Check. See, we read the comics.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and, you know, like when in the flick, when Stanley takes his revenge against the shady car shop guys, and, you know, and that was out of the book. And then when he's in the alley making the Tommy gun, I think that was the Calloway thing.
Yeah, that was a Calloway thing, but for a completely different
story. Right. And so they had those two little scenes, and then of course some aspects of the character, like how he moves around like Taz in a tornado and shit like that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and basic stuff like, you know, how you put on the mask and then it, you know. So very basic stuff from the books, you know, they took, but then they turned it into this family friendly kind of cartoony Tex Avery style. In fact, they were very, very proud that they were aping Tex Avery style, you know, and that Stanley Ipkiss was a big fan of Tex Avery's, and, you know, so it was more about being a cartoon character than it was this primordial force of fucking nature or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's
I meant to say primal rather than primordial.
When your movie rights get sold for you to a big company that has the budget to actually make a movie about your subject matter.
And see, and this is kind of how they did it back in the day. This, you know, you can't really blame The Mask because it was at worst like a symptom of a larger problem. And I enjoyed the movie for what it was, but it was made back at a time when, like, I know I'm going to commit blasphemy here, but, like, you watch Tim Burton's Batman movies now, and they're chintzy and cheesy. And
they don't hold up well at all.
They don't hold up well at all. But back then, they were the closest thing to a serious fucking superhero movie we had.
That's Dolph Lundgren's Punisher.
Well, yeah, which gets way more shit than I think it deserves.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
it was enough of a detachment that it still was kind of weird.
Right,
but
right.
It still worked.
It did.
And it still felt like Punisher.
Right. And then you get The Mask, and it still kind of feels like Mask, but at the same time, it is symptomatic of the larger cinematic issues back then, which was, we will take your comic book property, and we will totally render it into something that is, at best, barely comprehensible, you know?
And sanitized is all hell.
Right. Yeah. Which is what they wanted to do with The Watchmen, in fact, back then, you know? And it's frustrating to see, and that's one of the Mask is one of those properties I would, especially in the light of Deadpool, that I would love to see Hollywood revisit. You know, and can you imagine what what they could do now that Deadpool has shown you that there is an audience for fucking R-rated comic book movies?
Oh God!
Yeah,
can we get a Wildcats movie?
Oh yeah,
seriously.
Really, you want a Wildcats movie?
Yes.
Okay. I gotta tell you, I'm not as familiar with Wildcats as I probably should be. I just remember
personally,
that was Jim Lee's Wildstorm thing, right?
Yep.
Personally, I would just settle for a fucking documentary film to explain to me what the fuck Druna's plot up was about.
Which one?
Than just big Druna, like,
oh, Druna, like, oh God.
It's just a documentary to just explain the plot. I know it's just an excuse for that motherfucker to draw asses, but There was something there, and I want to make sense of it.
So, Dick, what were your thoughts on the flick?
I loved it growing up because it was a Jim Carrey movie, and it was zany and wacky and was funny.
The special effects were decent.
The special effects didn't suck, and, you know, Jim Carrey did his Jim Carrey thing.
Right.
And that was great. But at the same time as well, you know, you go and you read the comics and come back to it, and it's such a letdown.
Right.
And it's such an anticlimactic safe film.
Right.
It's so safe.
Taken on its own, it's fun. It's a fun flick for sure.
Yeah.
And one of Jim Carrey's better movies. But yeah, when compared to the comics, it is so much missed potential.
It falls flat on its face and doesn't really go ahead and pay respects to the source material at all. It kind of gives it a wink and a nod every once in a while, and it's like, here, yeah, fan service, this is how we do this, right? So you guys will like this, right?
Right.
And you know, while they're nice little touches and things, and it shows that they actually went and read the comics before making the movie, they just, you know, went through this, you know, almost like... It's kind of like,
a cynical checklist.
Yeah, exactly. It was literally just like, oh, you can't show that. Oh, you can't show that there. No, nope, no. All right, we're PG rated. That's good enough.
Yeah, it was given the Hollywood treatment for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it had been done independently and it had been able to have access to the same budget and the same A-list actors and things like that, it probably would have been a much different movie.
Or hell, if it were to be done these days, I could totally see it being done properly.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it would probably be a very, very good movie and would probably actually gross really well.
Oh god, talking about sanitized movies, I just got a flash of Spawn.
God,
please don't ever remind me that.
That's not a movie. That was the thing that happened.
I'll say this. There will one day be a Spawn episode of Back Issues, and on that day, the first person who fucking brings up that movie will never be on the podcast again.
All right, I've got
it. Hey, guys, remember Spawn?
Nope, that's it. You're fired. Get out of my studio.
Oh, shit. Yeah. And you know, the sad thing is you might have to remind me not to fucking mention it before the show.
Oh, yeah. I will tell everybody before the show. You bring up the fucking movie, you're gone, man.
Yeah. Because otherwise, I might be so dumb as to do it.
That Spawn movie. I mean, it had that Negro doing the Spawn things, and you know, that fucking clown eating maggots. It was, you know, amazing.
I will say that John Leguizamo as a clown was not the worst thing about the movie.
His makeup as a clown was one of the worst parts, though.
Well, yeah.
Like, if they could have CG'd him, like, and had him do the voice.
Right.
Like, nowadays, I kind of would
have... Well, dude, that was like... New Line Cinema always had that kind of, that weird kind of aesthetic to its flicks. Like, that really low-budget shit. And that movie would definitely exemplified it, for sure.
I got a question for you guys.
Sure.
How would you do the mask if you were to do a modern adaptation of that movie? Would he be pure CGI or would he be CGI overlaid an actor?
Facial overlay.
Yeah, you'd have to have it.
But the thing is, I'd mocap the face.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I definitely think you have to have that human aspect of it to kind of drive home, you know, the dichotomy between the mask and the host and shit like that, you know.
A better question. Which incarnation would you pick?
I'd start with the Ipkiss incarnation and then go from there if successful.
Yeah. Alright, then who would be Ipkiss in your ideal cast?
Edward Norton.
That's
you went to the same exact place I was going with it.
Yeah, he's right though.
That said, Ed Norton, if you're listening, I have a script for you.
I know you've been wanting to get back into comic books since the Incredible Hulk didn't do all that hot. So, yeah, let us do this for you, man. We want to get you back in. So what do you guys think? Are we nearing the end here?
We got about 5 minutes.
All right. So, Josh, do you got any closing thoughts?
It's The Mask is one of those IPs that I feel like didn't really get the movie treatment it deserved. However, it is definitely a classic and should be checked out by people. I enjoy it very much. It's one of those things that it's never not good. It's definitely going to stand the test of time, in my opinion, and it already does. I mean, we're, mm-hmm. you know, 20, 30 years out from when it was originally released, and it's still good.
89 to 15, yeah, that's... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're...
Yeah, so, I mean, that just goes to show that these storylines, these characters, while they're definitely set in a very specific time and era, you know, of the 80s, they're still, you know, very compelling and somewhat relatable in certain ways, and the very compelling stories, and the art is fantastic.
And it's just a batshit insane fucking story that you need to read at least once.
Exactly, exactly.
And it's got Doug Mankey. I mean, yes. What else do you need?
Yeah, and who else? We had our what's the name?
Arcudi.
Arcudi and Mark Badger.
Yeah.
And Doug Mankey.
I've always been a fan of Doug Mankey.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, and he did, I guess, the original Mask.
He did the Mayhem 1 through 4 with John Arcudi.
Yeah. Good stuff. But definitely. Yeah, go read it, you sons of bitches.
Yeah, go check it out, definitely. Go see if you can find a digital release of those and go pay for your comics.
Seriously though, I mean it's well worth
it's worth the money. Yeah. I'm not even kidding.
Or if you want to get you know, paper copy, get the Mask Omnibus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
That shouldn't be too hard to find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's probably
your local
Amazon.
Comic shop.
I was going to say, consult your local comic shop.
Amazon.com or
and
eBay.
And if they don't
or...
have it, go find a new fucking comic shop.
Or talk to them, see if they can order it.
Mm-hmm,
and, that too. And if they can't order it, go find another. Yeah. But no. You know, all joking aside, it's well worth reading. Yeah. Put it in your collection. And if you haven't already, drop us a line and let us know what you think about it.
Yeah, definitely.
We're always down to hear what our listeners have to say. We might not always care, but we'll listen.
We'll
read it.
Mike,
read it.
You got any closing comments?
None at this moment, no.
Something
I'm glad that you guys have been listening and basically hope to see you guys in the next couple of comic podcasts.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll probably have you on at some point, because I know 40K has comics, and I know Fantasy has comics.
Oh yeah, there's a comic for just about anything, so...
Exactly.
I mean, there could, at one point, given a dearth of material, be a fucking Darkwing Duck podcast. I mean...
I actually know somebody that would want to do that.
Well, there you go.
No, yeah, sorry. Trying to take a drink. I actually know somebody that would want to do a Darkwing Duck episode.
Wouldn't mind myself, actually.
Yeah.
Fucking, and actually, you know, all kidding aside, the Disney stuff is definitely worth talking about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe look for that in the future. Who knows?
All right, well, thank you all for coming, listening. We'll see y'all next time.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.